I got the red-eyed unemployed workers' desperation blues.
Why does a wealthy country like Australia allow its unemployed workers to struggle in poverty without trying to create jobs? You may well ask. Unemployed Workers Fight Back is the Australian Unemployed Workers Union program, part of the SUA program, on every second Friday of the month, 5:30 p.m. on 3CR Community Radio. Our social security system is being defunded, privatised and dismantled, and the poor and vulnerable are being criminalised and trampled upon. The Australian Unemployed Workers Union is focused on helping unemployed and underemployed workers deal effectively with the job agencies, empowering them to fight back for their rights. Remember, Unemployed Workers Fight Back every second Friday of the month at 5:30 p.m. on 3CR Community Radio.
I'm not sitting here because I want to be here. I hate being on the street. I can't stand it.
Believe me, people don't have much sympathy for sick people in this city.
I've been on the streets about 5 years.
Where is the support system? Is there people out there who you can turn to for help, for advice, for guidance?
I want to take my kids here, I want to go to the institution, I want to do all these kinds of things, but I'm so limited to what I can do.
There are those that probably do need a lot of help, and there are probably not enough help out there for it.
There needs to be resources put into services, and needs to be specific services that are dealing with homeless.
Hard work to be.
Really difficult lives.
So, good afternoon. I'm Valerie Farfalla, and you're with Unemployed Workers Fight Back, which is part of the SUA program, held on the second Friday of every month from 5:30 to 6:30. Our union, the Australian Unemployed Workers Union, is taking action alongside other groups such as the Anti-Poverty Network, Fair Go for Pensioners, to fight against the punitive social security system. Today my guests include Owen Bennett, President of the Australian Unemployed Workers Union, Sonia Dozic, Convener of the New Women's Division of the South Australian branch of the Unemployed Workers Union, and then we have Counsellor and Advocate for those fighting Centrelink, Kim Mercer, from the Anti-Poverty Network, and Kevin Vaughan, convener of Shack Frankston, that's a Seaford Action Housing Coalition. But now I'm going to put you through to Owen Bennett. You there, Owen?
Yes, hi, Valerie.
Lovely to talk to you today, Owen, after that absolute feast, the Public Action Forum Against Welfare Crackdown that we held that was so successful last Friday. I think we had about 60 people and we divided into some terrific workshops. Could you give us a brief summary of that before we move on to other things, please?
Sure, of course. Well, yes, we held the Public Action Forum Against the Welfare Crackdown, and as you said, it was a great turnout. And what made this event particularly special is that after the event, we formed three action groups fighting back against the ongoing attacks the government is making against Social Security, and just essentially what we see is that the government are doing is they're trying to dismantle our Social Security system. But it's about talking about what that means on the ground for people who are on Social Security, and we need to try to get those stories out into the public and basically talk about what is going on and how people on Social Security can fight back. And that's what the Unemployed Workers Union is doing, is giving a platform to unemployed workers and pensioners to fight back against this punitive Social Security system. And let's just look at it broadly. I mean, we know every Social Security payment is below the poverty line. The New Start rate, for example, is $380 per fortnight below the poverty line. We know there's no work available. There are 16 job seekers competing for every job vacancy. So the government has set up this economy that shuts out people from the labour market and then proceeds to blame, humiliate, stigmatise and punish those people for not finding jobs that don't even exist. So this is a shocking state of affairs. And put very simply, we can't let it go on any longer. And we have to fight back, because that's the only way things are going to change. Nobody's going to do it for us. That's been made very clear. We have to do it. We have to build our lives and build our power. And from that meeting, we've already formed a Work for the Dole Action Group, which is actually a meeting today right here at Trades Hall in the city. And we've already scheduled actions and outreach work. And I'm proud to announce that we're going to be holding an event on the 2-year anniversary of Josh Park Singh's death, tragic death, Josh Park Singh, at his work for the Dole site. We're going to be holding a memorial and public action forum on the 19th of April, and that's going to be a really, really important event to make sure the government knows that we're not going to sit down and cop these punitive policies anymore.
That's right. Well, that was shocking, wasn't it? And there's no real OH&S protection for people on Work for the Dole, because I understand the government says it's not really work. Is that right?
The data here, Valerie, is just shocking about what the government has gotten away with when it comes to Work for the Dole. I mean, this is a policy that's been ongoing since 1998. So it's actually the 20th anniversary this year of Work for the Dole. And what has it achieved? People have died. People are injured. And the government's own report shows that only 2% of people who work in Work for the Dole, who are forced to do Work for the Dole, these people are conscripts. They have no choice. They're basically demanded to do dangerous work, and if they don't do it, they cut off their payment. And that's exactly what happened with Josh Park Singh. We know that Josh Park Singh, an 18-year-old from Toowoomba, he suffered a minor injury at his Work for the Dole. He suffered a back injury, and he approached his job agent, Nito, and he asked them for information about the safety at the site, and he was concerned with the safety at his Work for the Dole site. And what we've been informed is that his job agency essentially fobbed him off and said that they can't help him, it's too much paperwork, they didn't want to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, about a week later, he died at his Work for the Dole site because his job agency refused to take safety seriously. And this goes right up to the top, Val, because we know that, according to another government report, 65% of Work for the Dole site don't meet basic safety standards.
Goodness.
And when you think about the thousands, there's about 100,000, 150,000 people who are forced to attend Work for the Dole sites. So 65% of those people are attending sites that don't meet basic safety standards, and the government is continuing to force people into these dangerous situations. It's completely unacceptable. You can imagine, it's just so, it's a very clear example of the way the government approaches unemployed people. So this is a major issue that's threatening the lives of unemployed people, and it's a very, very important issue that we're going to be fighting back against. So I'd encourage any listeners out there who want to get involved in pushing back and demanding that Work for the Dole be abolished, demanding that the government prioritise the safety of unemployed workers, I encourage them to get in contact with Unemployed Workers Union and join our Work for the Dole Action Group.
That's right. And look, Labor's signalling plans to dump punitive work for the Dole. I understand Labor's Employment Services spokesman, Ed Husic, he's already been saying there are questions over safety and effectiveness of Work for the Dole. And he says it's punishing people for not being in work rather than helping them find a job. So do you think we'll get a bit of support there?
Yeah, I think that's a great victory for the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. We've been working with Ed Husic's office, and it's been great to see them come out and make that statement. And I think that's the light at the end of the tunnel. We've made some big strides in getting Work for the Dole abolished, and it's just about holding the government accountable for what is a dangerous, punitive program that doesn't actually help people. It just punishes them, and it's very clear what's going on here. And when you think about on a broader perspective, what is Work for the Dole trying to do on a broader perspective? Well, it's trying to make it so painful and so humiliating and so punishing being on the unemployment benefit that people go and accept any job on any conditions, even if it's cash in hand, dangerous work. They're more likely to accept it because they know deep down how humiliating and dangerous it is to be on Work for the Dole. So what the union believes is that it's actually designed as a punishing program that in the end helps businesses, because businesses can put the fear of unemployment into their workers and say, if you don't accept my conditions, if you don't accept my low wages, then you'll have work for the dole to deal with. And that creates a very, very different labour market position where people think that they're scared to be unemployed. And you can see why, because work for the dole exists and it's a very, very dangerous program that is designed that way, essentially. So we need to get these stories out there. And for anyone out there who perhaps is on work for the dole or knows anyone who is attending work for the dole, there are important rights that you have that the union is very active in telling unemployed workers about, and you actually have the right to attend a voluntary activity of your choice instead of having to be forced to attend a work for the dole activity that your job agency forces you to attend. So this is an important right that all unemployed workers have that most people don't know about. You can actually avoid work for the dole. You have a right not to attend work for the dole if you make your own voluntary activity. And these are things we're trying to tell unemployed workers about. We're trying to tell work for the dole hosts about. We're trying to get people to boycott work for the dole across the board. And we're approaching work for the dole hosts. We're approaching unemployed workers on the ground, getting them to boycott work for the dole to send a very clear message to the government that we're not going to accept it any longer. So it's a very big campaign that we're running here, Valerie, and we encourage any listeners out there to get in contact, call our hotline. We have a national hotline that deals with all issues relating to job agencies. That should be on our Facebook and on our website. And for anyone out there,
unemployedworkersunion.com. And we also have a booklet with people's rights, unemployed workers' rights. There's another couple of things I want to ask you about, Owen. NXT, the Xenophon team, has backed off from part of the welfare reform bill. Is that right? Due to a lot of letter writing and work on behalf of a lot of the activist groups in this area. What do you have to say about that?
That's right, Valerie. That was another great campaign fought by the volunteers, the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. A lot of hard work went into this. It was our February flood campaign, and we knew that the government were trying to push through a series of very, very punitive reforms aimed at Social Security recipients and people on Newstart. They wanted to introduce a demerit point system, which would give job agencies extraordinary powers to penalise unemployed workers, including denying unemployed workers the right to appeal and abolishing Centrelink oversight when it comes to job agencies making penalties. So essentially what this would have done would privatise our compliance process for the first time in our history. And we knew that how dangerous this would be, so the Unemployed Workers Union and our members, we mobilised our supporters and got everybody to write in to the Nick Xenophon team, who held the balance of power in the Senate. And it was a great campaign where hundreds of letters were sent to the Nick Xenophon team. And although at first they said they struck a deal with Turnbull to pass the welfare reform bill, we, through the pressure that was put on by the Unemployed Workers Union and other groups like the Anti-Poverty Network, we all work together. And this just shows what unemployed workers are capable of. When we work together and when we put all our efforts into a single campaign, we're unstoppable. And we sent so many letters to Nick Xenophon team. We called them up. We ran these campaigns. The Anti-Poverty Network, they ran rallies outside at Nick Xenophon team members. And we put so much pressure on them that they backflipped and they ended up not supporting the bill. And I congratulate the Nick Xenophon team on seeing how important it was to oppose that bill. And we know the government are regrouping and they're going to start trying to break up the bill and pass it throughout the year. So that was one of the reasons why we set up our public action forum, Bradley, which we were talking about earlier, that we know the government are going to continue these attacks. So we need to be prepared. And we need to make sure that when they come again, we're going to be even stronger and we're going to be able to knock them on the head very, very quickly and then demand more from the government. So that's a very, very important campaign that we're going to be running.
Okay, there's one final thing I want to ask you about because I have someone else coming in a bit later. So and we've got another upcoming event, Job Agency Fight Back Information Session. And this is to fight back against these job agencies who we know are doing the wrong thing by many people. And that's on March 29th at Trades Hall. What time would that be? On March 29th.
That's at 4 p.m.
4 p.m, right.
That's 4 p.m. And, yes, it's going to be a monthly event where we just encourage all unemployed workers who are dealing with their job agencies and anyone who's interested in learning about unemployed workers' rights to come along, and I'll give a brief presentation about people's rights at job agencies, and then we'll have one-to-one sessions just informing people about their rights in particular situations. So if you have any concerns, or if you, there are listeners out there who are dealing with job agencies and want to learn more about their rights, and also just feel welcome in a community setting, because we want to try and build a community of unemployed workers who feel supported, because we know how hard it is to be unemployed in this country. You're labelled a dole bludger by the government for something that is not your fault. You're blamed for the government's failure to create enough work, and you're basically condemned to a life of poverty for something that you can't control, which is the government's lack of work. And then you have these job agencies to deal with they're not employment services agencies. What these job agencies are they're essentially benefit administrators. They're the people who are policing your benefit, and they're not actually providing any services at all. They're basically parole officers.
Yeah.
And they make up the rules as they go along. Excuse me, Valerie. All so right. I encourage people to come in.
Yeah, Friday mornings
on the 29th.
And also, they can, if they're interested in finding out more about the union, we have quite a lot of things happening at NUW, the union down in Bourke Street, Docklands. And on Fridays, we have a research group and other activities. If you want to know about joining our hotline or finding out more about our information, what's the best phone number to ring, Owen?
Well, I think the best number to ring would be the hotline if you're interested in your
number?
Rights or you want to.
Yeah.
The Unemployed Workers Union hotline is 03-8394-5266. Oh. And if you can't get through there, then it'd be good just to go on the Facebook or the website and have a look at our email there, and you can send us an email. Another thing I'd like to mention is that we're running a reading group on Friday the 16th. We've got a lot of stuff coming up, so it might be a bit overwhelming for people listening, but there's a full list of our events on our Facebook. We have a lot of events coming up here in Melbourne, and we're running a reading group on the 16th of March also at Trades Hall at the New International Bookshop, and that's going to be held at 3 p.m. where we're going to go through books, and the book we're going to be analysing is Bill Mitchell's book, new book on reclaiming the state. And Bill Mitchell, for those who don't know, is a very well-known Australian economist who has developed the theory of the job guarantee, which is the theory that the government should create jobs for everybody, for every unemployed worker. And this is a very, very important idea that we're going to be looking into, and we're going to be trying to discuss these economic ideas and political ideas and try to refine our understanding of how economics works and how the government are getting away with essentially their responsibility to create work for everybody. So these are very important questions. So if you're interested in this area, it'd be great to have you at these range of events and joining this movement to fight for a society where there's work for everybody and a dignified social security system.
Okay, thank you very much, Owen Bennett. Owen Bennett's the president of the Australian Unemployed Workers Union. We'll see you later, Owen.
Thank you, Val.
Look out, chum, I'm a single mum. I'll eat you for breakfast. Yum, yum, yum.
Why do we get such bad press? They criticise the way we dress. We have no morals, we're inherently evil, and our children are the spawn of the devil.
Spawn of the devil, spawn of the devil.
When a single mother comes your way, look out, brother, she's ready to play.
She's ready to play, she's ready to play. With time on her hands, yes, she's free all day.
Does this sound much like reality? We're defrauding the government, just wait and see. So they'll cut our payments and what we can make, because single mothers are all on the take.
All on the take, all on the take.
Loose women, let loose, look out for your guy. If it wasn't so crazy, I'd laugh till I cry.
Laugh till I cry, laugh till I cry. Single mums are the witches of times gone by.
Tie us fast to the stake and light up the fire. We're parents, no partners, we roll in the mire. And if we flash a breast while feeding the child, wow, that's disgusting, the papers go wild.
The papers go wild, the papers go wild.
Men feel threatened, how did their mothers get by? If it wasn't so crazy, I'd laugh till I cry.
Laugh till I cry, laugh till I cry. Single mums are the witches of times gone by.
So it's off to the Sabbath to ride on a goat. Tie me to a dunking stool, whoopee, I float. I'll stroke my familiar and grow a few herbs. It's a hotbed of wigger out here in the burbs.
Here in the burbs, here in the burbs.
While we're dancing round fires, sky-clad and proud, we'll stand up for our rights and shout them out loud.
Shout them out loud, shout them out loud. Single mums are the witches, should not be allowed.
Tired and troubled.
Hello, Sonia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm talking to Sonia Beitch. She's the convener of the new women's division of the South Australian branch of the Unemployed Workers Union. Now, what a brilliant idea, forming a women's branch. Is that right?
Thank you, Valerie. That's right. Thank you. Yes, its official inception was yesterday.
Yeah.
On International Women's Day, of course.
Of course, yes.
And yes, that's right.
Why did you do that?
Why? Well, being on welfare myself, I'm divorced, I'm a single mum.
Yeah.
I wanted to create a group that was culturally and linguistically diverse and LGBTQI friendly as well, women and children being the focus.
Yeah.
So last night I had about 10 people turn up and a lovely speaker by the name of Sandra Kank, who is with the Australian Democrats, and she presented a 15-minute speech on the suffragette movement, which was very interesting, and how the women got the first vote. And so it was really lovely. It was a bit of a meet-and-greet networking, but it's good. It's early days yet, like I said, and being Adelaide, we've got to get around. And, yes, I'm looking forward to, this huge venture, huge journey, and,
We played a song earlier called Single Mum by Jazz Stutley, sung by Marita Gray. And single mums do have a hard time, especially when the kids get older and they've got to try and manage on Newstart and trying to juggle with kids and childcare, and it's really ridiculous, isn't it? It's almost impossible.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, being my daughter is at university on years allowance, but, you know, I got to a point where I got fed up seeing what was happening to women, especially going into places like the library. Women were coming up and asking me for help. Sonia, you know, I'm about to be evicted from my unit. Mm. I don't want to go down the homelessness path. Lots of interesting women that have never had to, basically fall through the cracks, they've never had to sort of humble themselves and ask for help because they've never had to go through a system that is so punishing and so unfair. And it's like everything now, you find the government are just making it difficult, I think, for any women to aspire to any standard of living.
That's right. It's hard enough to get a job, isn't it? I mean, it's pretty impossible to get a job. And then when you've got, especially when you've got younger kids... Also, now the government's brought in this thing about proving that anyone you may share a house with, if it's a male, is not your de facto, which is ludicrous because people share houses. That's the way they can afford to live.
Absolutely, yes.
It's like going back to the 50s or something. I mean, they call in judgment deliberately. That's why, you know, they punish people for being on the dole, and now they punish people for being sole parents as well.
Yes. That's right. I mean, circumstances do navigate, unfortunately, but nuclear families aren't so much the thing anymore, I guess, and people have to survive. You know, like you go back to the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the pyramid, and there's an indication of how many people struggle to, you know, aspire to the top of the pyramid just with everyday needs. You know, it's quite a concern, I think, what's happening to you know, women and children in the country. So,
I think it's brilliant that you've done this. In the South Australia branch is a new division as well, and to bring in a women's one, I think it's fabulous. It's just so exciting. I know that Julia Gillard, well, I was all in favour of her until she brought this in. I thought, what on earth are you thinking? And I think that was just so disappointing. We've got to somehow change that around. Have you got any plans for campaigns to change that around?
Absolutely. Well, my whole idea is to, you know, build each other up and build a collective. And there are so many intelligent, creative women out there who I feel will benefit from this group, who can bring their skills and ideas, because it's not about me. It's about them. Yeah. They've, you know, it's about getting women to be strong, getting women to feel they can participate in the community and feel valuable. And I have a lot of ideas on the drawing board. And like I said, I'll have my next meeting in about 6 weeks' time. Mm. And, yeah, I've had quite a number of interested women from, you know, called backgrounds, etc. So, yeah, it's early days yet, but it's exciting as well. So I want to be able to give them a safe space to say, hey, come on, you know, lots of ideas. It's just finding the resources and building them from there.
I guess, Sonia, you've also got women who may be fleeing domestic violence, so that brings another element into it, doesn't it?
Yes, I'm a survivor of domestic violence as well, and I find, you know, with this government and everything, the lack of therapeutic services out there, and we know with DV survivors, it's actually quite a journey to reclaim oneself again, and, you know, having gone through it myself and come out the other side. Mm. And, yes, it's basically, you know, going through all sorts of stages of empowerment and having you know, living a healthy life mentally, emotionally, etc., being able to contribute again to the community, right, being a valuable member of the community.
I think it's wonderful, and Hayden's really good too, the South Australian branch. It's wonderful that we're all working together, and of course we're working closely.
We're mentoring each other, which is fantastic. It's really
it
great.
Is.
Yeah.
And we're all working closely with the Anti-Poverty Network and other groups like Fair Go for Pensioners. Yes. They're good too. They're not just, it's not just old age pensioners, it's anyone who's getting a social security benefit. And
like I said, my group is just not open to the single mums on the dole, you know, women on the pension as well, the DSP, carers. So, yeah, so anyone on welfare, really. So, yeah.
Whereabouts do you meet, Sonia?
Well, at the moment, we're working on that to sort of create a space that is flexible and perhaps in the CBD. We've had our function last night in a city community centre, which is well used. So I'm sort of working on it, putting it out there slowly. See what happens.
All right. Well, look, thank you very much for speaking to Unemployed Workers Fight Back, and I hope we'll be in touch over the next few weeks working on some campaigns. So,
my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much indeed.
Stand up. sick and tired of your ism, schism game. Dine and go to heaven in a Jesus' name, Lord. We know and we understand. Almighty God is a living man. You can fool.
Hello, Kim. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I'm speaking to counsellor and advocate for those fighting Centrelink, Kim Mercer. She's also from the Anti-Poverty Network in South Australia, and she has her own business, Harmony Restored, for vicarious trauma debrief. That sounds very interesting. Kim, I've been trying to get you in this program for ages. You've been doing amazing things with the Anti-Poverty Network. And what I wanted to ask you about in particular was the Anti-Poverty Network's approach to dealing with politicians to try to get them to see the light. Can you tell us a bit about what you've done recently with the APN, your group?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Valerie.
Pleasure.
Now, what we've been doing is we've done an election forum.
Yeah.
And what we did is we held it in the seat of Hartley in South Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually the seat that Nick Xenophon is running for in the coming up election end of next week, in the state election.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do when we hold these forums, we held one for the last federal election as well. We invite the politicians in, one from each of the major parties and other parties that are running in the area, and then during the event, what we actually do is we start with speakers, members of ours, telling our personal stories of how decisions that politicians make, whether it's state or federal, affect the lives of people.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're not just a number on the sheet for how people go forward. So at this rally being state, we had myself and another lady talking about housing, myself talking about our way to fight for disability accessible housing.
Yeah.
Another lady spoke on her housing, as in she's already in housing and maintenance and the moving and all those kind of things that the Housing Trust is putting her through at the moment. Another person spoke on electricity. So, and electricity prices, which are all state government initiatives.
Yeah.
But how these things actually affect the everyday person, not just on paper.
Yeah. How wonderful. And what sort of response did you get? Did some of an eye-opener for some of the pollies?
Very much so. We after some of the stories, a couple of the politicians, including Nick Xenophon, had tears in their eyes,
mm-hmm.
listening to the real stories, the real struggles that people actually go to, and not just what the mainstream media want to portray out in the public.
Oh, I hope that they take action on these teary eyes then, because that's what you need, isn't it?
that's the hope. It's about putting the reality and the person back behind what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them only see whatever comes across their desk or whatever whatever their advisors are telling them that they need to be doing, or, you know, or only seeing the information provided with a party's proposal of what they're trying to get through Parliament, and not actually seeing the real individual stories that go behind and what make up society.
Now, Xenophon's team has backed off a little bit from some of the punitive welfare reform bills. We've all been working hard on that, writing letters, etc. Do you think you've got through, or is this just a temporary thing while the government tries to come back and bring it in again in different ways?
I think the federal government is always going to try and bring these things back through.
Mm-hmm.
It's about not letting our guard down. It's about paying attention and doing what we can do. And even if all you can do is write to or call up a politician, whether it's depending on the issue, federal or state, and calling the right person that can listen and just telling your story. You don't need to be saying, you know, too much. People go, I don't know what to say. Tell them your story. Tell them how what they're proposing to do is going to affect your life and how it's going to, you know, because it makes us real people. Quite often, definitely in regards to Centrelink issues, is that Centrelink is that politicians and senators, all they get is a numbers-based system. They get there were this many calls on the complaint lines and there was this many this and whatever. But by actually calling and speaking to someone, if you've got issues with Centrelink or job agencies or anything like that, but ringing someone and actually telling your story, you become a real person and not just a part of the statistics.
I think that's really important. Sure. And you have a website, as we do, where there are a number of people that are putting their stories up, which can be quite horrifying. Now, I know that, Kim, you are, as a counsellor, you come across quite a lot of different issues for people. How are they finding the DSP? Are most of them, you know, not able to get onto it? People, you know, they've been rejected, medical certificates not looked at. Are you having that sort of problem in South Australia?
We are, and that's a nationwide problem, and that's even a problem in my own household.
Yeah.
In my own household, my daughter has multiple disabilities, and we are still fighting for her DSP, even though I'm paid to be her carer.
Yeah.
And she's on one of the highest care needs categories for NDIS. They are still denying her DSP.
I can't believe
it.
What's
their
reason?
And over again. They just keep coming back to the legislation says she doesn't have enough points. But the legislation is wrong when it comes to this. There was actually an audit done on the government processes, which happens when they do any major changes to things in Parliament. There's an independent, but it's government paid, but it's not government run.
Yeah.
Service that actually audits these changes going through. And the current Liberal government asked for this one to be done in 2015 about changes they were wanting to make to take away the medical form for DSP applications.
Mm-hmm.
What that report showed is that that report will not make a difference to people with profound individual disabilities. So someone who's, you know, really severe in one table area only, but it found that it was going to severely impact and disadvantage those with multiple disabilities.
That's shocking, isn't it? And it's just to cut the dollar.
So they knew this, and they knew this going forward before they made these changes that they still went ahead and made. We know the statistics, I think just over 5 years ago, the statistics were 55% of DSP applications were approved.
Yeah.
So the latest evidence we have is 15% being approved after all administration trials, after all appeals and everything else, and only 5% without appealing.
Oh, it makes it so
difficult. Which is basically telling the it is, and it's telling the people, and even medical professionals, that they don't know what they're talking about when they say that their patient can't work.
Mm.
Who knows us better than our GPs?
I know. I've
and
heard,
our doctors and our specialists.
On our hotline, I've had lots of calls from people ringing through saying that they filled in all the forms they were meant to, but now their doctors aren't complying filling in the forms either. And so they're not... They're not getting the response that they need. They're not getting that support. Who can they turn to?
There's a huge amount of doctors that are actually refusing to fill in Centrelink forms now because they're like, well, we're going to be ignored anyway. I'm not spending the time doing it. And now that there's no actual medical form for DSP, so there's not a form that you take to your doctor and then you might get some letters from your specialist backing up what your doctor's saying. there's no form anymore. So all, what you need is you need a detailed letter from your doctor and every specialist you see and every provider that may provide a service in regards to your disability to you, to write this letter describing how each and every aspect of your disability affects your ability to work and your life. Some of these letters can be up to 10 pages long. No doctor has the time to do that for their patients. Our medical staff are so overworked. Just look at the times it takes to get into your GP for most people now.
Yeah.
They just don't have the time to sit down for every patient that needs it and write these ridiculous reports.
And the government, it really is all about cutting the welfare dollar. It's really about that. It's quite ruthless. It's bean counting. But also people with disabilities have quite high needs, whether they be physical equipment or other needs, you know, physiotherapy. There's a whole range. How on earth can they afford that on something like Newstart?
They can't, and that's the issue, is that we're finding so many people are shoved onto an inadequate payment that in the reality doesn't actually save the government any money.
No.
This is what we're finding, because when you're on Newstart, for example, you've got mutual obligations, you've got Department of... you know, if you're a disability, you're with a DES provider, so that's a Disability Employment Services provider. And these things cost money every fortnight.
Yeah.
Surely that costs more than the $200 a fortnight they're saving by not having you on Newstart, by not having you on DSP.
Yeah, that's right. It's
just like we know with the costing of the cashless welfare card, that they were wanting to spend $10,000 a year to prevent... to tell someone how they're going to spend $13,000 a year. Yeah. But we couldn't raise Newstart by $50 a week.
It's happening with some of the local councils. We've got one in Moreland now. That's good. We're starting to get on your bandwagon as well, which is really good. So Moreland's joined 10 South Australian local councils. But we've
10 called... South Australian local councils, and we're still getting more. We've just, like anything, we need the support of the public for these things. So what we need and what you guys need at the Australian Unemployed Workers Union is people in areas standing up, people actually writing into you guys or us at the Anti-Poverty Network. It doesn't matter. The emails will get through to the right people either way. And saying to people, this is the council area I'm in. I want to stand up and make a difference.
Exactly.
Because we've got people standing up and making that difference when we go to an area and look at an area and go, okay, we want to ask this particular council to support what we're currently doing. We can then quickly look and go, okay, we've got 10 people on our books in that area who are wanting to speak up about this, and then we can get them working towards that council. It's really hard when we have nobody in council areas, especially city ones.
Yes.
The country ones, sometimes their councils have actually come to us. Half of the councils that we actually got from the South Australia, we actually didn't... Well, we wrote a letter to, like we did to all of them, but they actually took it on their own back to actually put it through... there and vote on it in their council for some of the country ones, especially the ones that we got very quickly at the beginning.
Yes.
So the Clare Valley.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Kangaroo Island. Those ones that's just a little bit further out.
So we've got, we called for it, it was passed by Moreland, for Newstart to be increased to the Henderson poverty line. Now, Newstart is $177 below the poverty line. And as we know, many unemployed people have to choose between putting petrol in the car to look for work or food because they can't afford both. This is outrageous. Yep. We've got to work on that. Plenty of other things too. But look, I just want to thank you very much for coming on our show, Unemployed Workers Fight Back. And I'm sure we'll have you back again. We'd love to talk to you sometime about your business, Harmony Restored, as well.
Yep, not a problem. Anytime you want me, just let me know. I know we had a few logistical issues at the end of last year getting me on, so that wasn't due to either of us not trying.
No, but you certainly will have you on again. Thank you very much. Okay. Bye-bye.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Little bit of gold shining in the murky water, glistening diamonds on random street corners. Treasure chest of hope waiting to be discovered. Uncover, undercover, below the radar. Big brother, when we start picking on each other, tell the world that we love her. Tell the world,
tell the world.
Little bit of gold shining in the murky water, glistening diamonds on random street corners. Treasure chest of hope waiting to be discovered. Uncover, undercover, below the radar. Big brother, when we start picking on each other, tell the world that we love her. Tell the world,
tell the world.
Let them know, let them know.
Find the key like DMT to Terrence McKenna. Searching for them sacred blue apples on life's adventures. Unlock all blocks, way we really truly meant to. Propel our present and carry on, still remember. History stolen by mad rulers with cruel agendas. Pretending they superior, fearing that we surrender. Either let them get us penned up or pen up. We ink filling pages on stages with lasers like Lyric Tesla. Breaking ground with the sound of an earth tremor. Enter the calm before the storm, we in the center. Universal dispersal of data in a sense of flux. In amongst them ups and downs, seems you got stuck. So we here to unstuck, yeah, till you be yelling. Yeah, this higher than upper echelons in their deck chairs. Uppercut with a subsonic ruckus to chase them up the stairs. Reclaiming our resources and sharing them till them get there.
And that was Tell the World, Combat Wombat. And earlier you heard Get Up, Stand Up from Bob Marley, and you also heard Single Mum from Jazz Stutley from a Reds Under the Bed Activist Cabaret record from a while ago. But now I'm talking to Kevin Vaughan, convener of SHAC, Seaford Action Housing Coalition at Frankston. Hello, Kevin. How are you?
Hello. How are you going?
Oh, good. I was really thrilled to meet you at the Frankston branch meeting of the AUWU several weeks ago, and you told me about SHAC. And one of the visions of yours is to be in solidarity with homeless people and those at risk of homelessness in and around Seaford. So tell us about SHAC, please?
Well, first of all, SHAC is a combination of a number of small groups. It started off with the Catholic Church of Parish St. Anne's Social Justice Group, went to the Seaford Community Committee, St. Vincent de Paul's, and then a number of people who lived in the Seaford Beach Cavern Park. Not long after we started, it was the intention of the Frankston Council to close down a cavern park on the Pean Highway between Seaford and Frankston and turn the land into a car park.
Oh.
A number of the people, the tenants in the cavern park, were protesting about that fact because there was no provision for where they would go if it was closed down. And all of the groups I've just mentioned got in contact with each other, and we called a meeting, and we protested and said we didn't want that to happen. We met the owner, Michael Hibbard, and we went through all the rigmarole of the laws and the land leasing and so on. Anyway, we had this big meeting, and a lot of the people, the tenants, came along, and the Frankston Council changed its mind, and the cavern park still exists.
Well, well done for putting in that action with your group. Yeah, it's well worth it, isn't it?
There were seven.
Go on.
I beg your pardon?
Sorry, continue.
Oh, no, I was just going to say there were 70 cabins. There were over 100 people living there. There were a number of single fathers, and over a weekend they were able to bring their kids to the cavern park.
Yeah.
If they're living in a rooming house, that's not possible.
Yeah.
There's no place for children. And it was, and there was a good community development that took that occurs down there.
Yeah.
And we were told by the manager that on occasion they get 10 applicants a day to move into the place.
Oh, that's amazing. So are you're looking at developing that further so there'll be more room for more people?
What we've done, we've identified a number of sites in Seaford. And there's a lot more in Frankston and all over the metropolitan area. We've identified a number of sites that we would like the local council and the government to set aside and then develop another cabin park.
Oh.
And we've been there to see our local member, and she's Sonia Kilkenny, and she thinks it's a good idea. And so we're trying to, we'll be going along on Tuesday night to make sure that the cabin park is not closed down when the lease runs out. And we want to promote the idea of a cabin park for people who are living at the moment in rooming houses. In Frankston, there are 45 rooming houses registered, and we don't know how many unregistered. There was a survey done a couple of years ago, and people who did the survey identified 70 rooming houses in Frankston.
Right, and what sort of standards do they have to meet? Is there a definite standard that they've got to meet, or are they below the standards?
There are standards. I think in Frankston the largest number of rooms you can have in a rooming house are 8, depending on the size of the place. But when we first started, we went over to the Pines or the Frankston North area, and we were told that the rooming houses, you get a room in a rooming house, a three-bedroom housing commission house converted to 6 or 8 rooms,
mm-hmm.
and you pay $180 for a room.
That's and amazing. Out of Newstart, which is $268. Heavens, how do you pay all the bills?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, now it's gone to 210.
You're kidding.
So there are people living in rooming houses who get the new start 268. And then they get a rent allowance, but they pay $210 a week for a room.
That is shocking.
Now, the walls of the room might be made of cardboard.
Yeah.
And everyone is vulnerable.
And they've all got to share the same bathroom or something, is that right?
You've got to share the bathroom, you've got to share the kitchen.
Mm.
So, and it's not safe. In most, in a lot of these places, it's just not safe.
Nice.
People are attacked, their goods are stolen, and it's a miserable form of lifestyle for a lot of people.
You were also interested in putting a cap on how much the caravan and the camping costs could be, weren't you, as well? What sort of prices do they have to pay?
Well, it's very difficult because most of the rooming houses are privately owned and people can charge what they like
mm-hmm.
or what they, what they can get. Most of the people running the rooming houses charge at the highest rate possible.
Yes.
And of course, the alternative is to sleep on the foreshore or sleep in a park or sleep in a car.
Are numbers growing? Are numbers growing down there, homeless people?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We did a Sleepless in Seaford report where the author of the report, David Maloney, he went out and spoke to the police and all sorts of other people and spoke to ourselves. And we think there could be, and it's very hard to get exact figures, but we think there could be between 10 and 20 a night sleeping rough in and around Seaford and Frankston.
And one of your missions is to meet those at risk, identify their needs, and work with them towards achieving viable solutions. Liaise with government.
That's what you do. Once a person, the worst situation that a person can be in is to be homeless.
Yeah.
And it becomes obvious to everybody, especially predators, who's homeless, because if you haven't got somewhere to live, you've got to walk around with your bag all the time, right?
Yeah.
So it becomes obvious that you know, the predators, people who rob them and attack them, they spot them straight away. And then of a night time, they know where they go. A lot of homeless people go to McDonald's and sit around McDonald's, and then they've got to go down to the foreshore. Well, the predators see it all, you see.
Are older women increasing, the number of older women who've been forced out? We've heard that many sleep in their cars.
Well, look, most of the people that we know who are in this category are men.
Are they?
Most of them are men. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying, it's just that we only work in the Seaford Frankston area, and most of the homeless are men. Not all. And there is one, there's one boarding house for women in Mornington, I think it is. So we don't have a lot of contact with women who are homeless.
Yeah.
Although we understand that there are plenty of them, and it's a growing sector of the of our community. Yeah. So, but at the moment, it's mostly men.
I think you've got a meeting on tonight down there, haven't you? Or sometime soon? Can we just announce that? Oh, it was last night.
Okay. Yeah, it was last night. And then we're going down to the council next Tuesday to discuss the future for the cabin park.
All right. Well, look, thank you very much for being on Unemployed Workers Fight Back.
Yeah.
It was a pleasure to meet you, Kevin Vaughan.